Today on Dog Pound Report, reactions from the vets as they start OTAs. What Cleveland Browns player was named to the NFL Top 100 Players list? And which Browns know their way around the green? Keep it locked right here. This is Dog Pound Report.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Dog Pound Report. I'm Andy Baskin, Nathan Zagura, as he is each and every week. The weather has finally warmed up. OTAs are underway, and we go right to our first trending topic. Nathan, you were in Berea this week watching OTAs. What did you see?
I finally got to see some football, Andy. Players in helmets, offense versus defense, 7-on-7, 11-on-11. So it's good to see the Browns out there, their first practices of the year. It's a lot of the install period right now. They're getting the defensive and offensive playbooks in there, but it was good to just see them out there actually playing some football.
All right, explain OTAs for the folks that don't know what it is.
OTA stands for Organized Team Activity, and it means they get together. It's basically practice. It's just a practice. There'll be 10 OTA sessions before they have their mini camp, June 16th to the 18th, and then they break for the summer. Come back in training camp. But this is really the first time for the veterans, the rookies, everybody get in there and actually play some football, offense against defense, the ones against the ones, the twos against the twos, work on everything and actually implement what's going to happen here in the fall.
All right, let's get a little bit more on this. And head coach Mike Pettine talked about what he was seeing in the practice field and what are his thoughts.
As I told him, I think it's a typical first day, some sloppiness. I think there's rookies integrating with the vets, just kind of learning how to practice. And then the one thing that from a scheme standpoint, that we've put a lot in both sides of the ball, and we're going to do some things to test each other, and it tests ourselves, guys getting lined up. And so it was, like I said, a typical first day. A lot of good teaching moments on tape. You know, the key is that we can go in and get it graded and go through it with them, and the mistakes are getting corrected and not repeated. Well, I think the pre-snap movement stuff, I think, is good. We're not going to overdo it. I know that's we want to get a lot of it in, but you kind of have a feel for what defenses, who does this affect, who does it not affect. So we don't want to just shift in motion just to tire our guys out and not have it have an effect. So we're going to install a lot. We're going to throw a lot at our guys and see what we can retain, and then sit back as coaches and look at here's what we do well. And go ahead and highlight that. It's like back to school for me. Just to you kind of see plays from the defensive side, and now you kind of learn the structure of them and what specifically, just the details of it. And it's good to kind of sit in the meeting almost like a player, and learn it. And that way you get a better appreciation of what these guys have to go through. We tell them, hey, go home, get in your playbook, do this, do that. And I'm realizing that, hey, we're asking a lot of these guys. And to me, it's you have to be mature and have to be professional to be able to handle the volume of an NFL offense.
All right, so we get a good picture on that. And for him coming back in his second season, I mean, this has to feel a lot easier for head coach Mike Pettine.
Oh, he said he feels like he's been doing it so much longer. He said, I didn't realize how many things I didn't know last year. So he's got his formula set up. He's getting more involved with the offense. You heard him talking about John DeFilippo's offense. A lot of motion. You're going to see that. A lot of shifting. A lot of bursts. Bringing guys in tight and then, boom, spreading them out wide or bringing them in. Having Hawkins go half motion back and those quick hit him on the quick out, get a little bit of a rub there. There's a lot of that in this offense, and you're seeing that early here in the install period. And I'll tell you what, Josh McCown has really stood out to me. His leadership, his poise, looks like an NFL quarterback. We'll talk about him a little bit later. But the receivers, Dwayne Bowe, the physicality that he brings, the precision from Brian Hartline. Hawk's been unbelievable with his footwork. Taylor Gabriel's speed, saw him get deep over Joe Hayden for a couple big plays. The wide receivers actually look better than you would think, and it's nice to see kind of that veteran leadership at the top with Bowe and Hartline.
All right, how much were they missing that last season then?
A lot, because last year you looked at this wide receiving core, and it was Miles Austin one, and he wasn't really participating in anything because those hamstrings, if you remember, they were resting him. Then you had Andrew Hawkins was your two. Travis Benjamin was probably your three at that point. And then you didn't really know what you had behind that. You had all those young undrafted guys. Now you've got pros, guys who have been over 1,000 yards in the NFL, in Bowe and Hartline at the top. Hawkins moves back in the slot where he's most dangerous. You're going to have a real competition to make this team team as a wide receiver this year. Now you draft Vince Maley. You have Gabriel, who was third in the league in yards per catch last season. Travis Benjamin wants to make this team. Marlon Moore was a special team standout. Rodney Smith starting to make some plays. So all of a sudden, it's going to be an interesting battle at that spot.
Well, it feels like the upgrade at wide receiver is unbelievable. All right, also, our next trending topic this week is the announcement that Tashaun Gibson is number 67 on the NFL's top 100 players list of 2015. This is a list that was solely voted on by current NFL players. It's his first time making the list, first time he was selected to the Pro Bowl. Lots of great things ahead for Mr. Gibson.
That's right, Andy. This is a big honor for him, making the NFL top 100, number 67 overall. Last year, Gibbs, 6 interceptions, only 11 games, and still had the respect of his peers to be named on this list. And I think that's very impressive. Obviously, you know, I'm sure his agent likes it. It's probably like, hey, in these contract negotiations, number 67 player in the NFL. But this is a guy last year allowed only a 41.9 quarterback rating when he was thrown at. That was second best among all safeties who played 700 snaps. 11 picks over the last 2 years, near the top of the league there. And one of the reasons why this pass defense was so darn successful. Great honor for him. 3 of the 4 guys in the secondary went to the Pro Bowl. We'll see how many of them actually make the top 100. I think maybe Joe Hayden slides in there as well.
Well, okay, but you also look at the confidence factor that you have now, too. When you've got a guy that knows that he's respected by his peers across the league, it only helps everybody else, all the other DBs.
Of course it helps everybody when you know you have that center fielder back there that's going to clean up your mistakes. If you get beat deep, you can play a little more aggressive up front. Ed Reed did this forever in Baltimore defense, which is the same defense Mike Pettine and Jim O'Neill are running here. So to have a free safety like Tashaun Gibson, the ball-hawking type of guy that he is, it's huge for this team.
How about stepping up in a leadership role for him as well, too?
Well, we got to get him here. That's the thing. He's got to sign. He's got to get in here. He's not participating in the OTAs right now. A little bit of a standoff because I think he wants to be paid like one of the top safeties in the National Football League. I think the Browns want to pay him like one of the top, but maybe not the top. They're probably saying, you didn't even finish the season. Let's see you stay healthy and prove this over time. The good news for Browns fans is, though, he's got the restricted tender. He's got to play for the Browns. Nobody signed him to an offer sheet. So you're going to have him there. And if contract talks don't get done this season, you can always franchise him. And so he's going to be here at least 2 more years. And I think everybody wants this done for the long term.
So fans, don't worry. That's what you're
about. Don't worry at all about Tashaun Gibson. He will be playing for the Cleveland Browns this year and next year at a minimum.
All right, you said it. Make sure everyone's happy.
Don't worry.
All right, we have a lot more coming up. We're going to hear from starting quarterback Josh McCown and more news on the OTAs coming up. So don't go anywhere. More Dog Pound Report coming up after this.
Up next, with OTAs in full swing, we shed light on what you'll see from both sides of the ball in 2015 as exclusive interviews with Coach Tabor and Paul Kruger are next.
Welcome back, Dog Pound. Last year, it was all about the quarterback controversy between Brian Hoyer and Johnny Manziel. This year, Josh McCown has already been tapped to enter training camp as the starter. Here's what the veteran has to say about his first snaps as the Browns quarterback.
The approach for me is the same as far as just the expectation, the way that you want to set the tone. And we're a new group, and anytime you come together, as a new group, there are going to be growing pains. But I think for us, we understand, especially within this division and the offenses that you have and the quarterbacks, on the other teams, that we've got to set the bar high early and really hold ourselves to a high standard in order to kind of, speed up that learning curve, so to speak. I'm just conscious of the fact that I'm on a team, and when you're a part of a team, you serve and help the guys around you, and that starts, inside your room in your position group. And so for me, that's the quarterbacks on the roster. And at this stage of my career, they're all the younger quarterbacks on the roster. And so you just give them what you can to help them. And we're all in it together. And I've said it from day one. I want to see the Cleveland Browns and the quarterback position be better than it's been. And so I want to do my part to help that happen on the field. But then if something happens and I'm not playing, then whoever is playing, that those guys play productive too. So we're in it together. You know what? I mean, for Johnny, it's, one day at a time. And you just got to keep stacking good days. And I will say to this point, from everything I've seen, he's every day has been a good day. He stacked up a good day on top of another. And I'm, really proud of him for that. He's in there working and asking questions and staying late and doing all the little things that it takes to play this position. you know, because this position is very demanding, and it's demanding of a lot of things emotionally, and you know, of your time and effort, and so I think he's understanding that, and he's embracing that, and that's the key.
Well, definitely a man that has the seasoning to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. What were your impressions of him on the field?
You know, it was the first time I had an opportunity to actually see him on a field, and I'd watched a lot of tape on Josh McCown, but he's an impressive physical presence, stands very tall in the pocket, has a much stronger arm than we're used to seeing. Now, Brandon Weeden had a strong arm, but Josh McCown has a stronger arm than we saw last year, but he goes through his reads so quickly. He's completely in sync with this offense. You can see him go boom, boom, boom across the field, third read, fourth read. He knows how to get through his progressions. He's incredibly accurate with the football is what I've seen, throws a very tight spiral, and he's got a lot of leadership. You can see in some of the clips where he's over there patting Malcolm Johnson on the butt. There was a big play that they kind of simulated, a third down one. He hit Andrew Hawkins on a little jerk route, threw the ball where only Hawk could get it, went over there and was like, yeah, Hawk, fired up. You can just sense the leadership of Josh McCown out there. And he talked about, too, what he's going to do off the field, helping everybody else. That's something the Browns haven't had, that kind of veteran quarterback who was also a mentor. And I think that'll help the young quarterbacks, Johnny Manziel and Connor Shaw.
How long do you think the transition is, though, once you walk into a new offense? It can't be easy. It's like having somebody hand you a new encyclopedia and say, oh, by the way, you got to know that tomorrow.
Yeah, it's like reading a whole new book in a different language. But for him, he has the knowledge of this offense from his time with John DeFilippo in Oakland. So they'd work together. He understands some of the core principles there. And I think you can tell that he's advanced right now. He looks like the starter. That's what I would say after seeing him for 2 days. He is the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns.
And there's no controversy. We know he is.
That's correct. Where
he is. Just take advantage of it and make it happen in camp. Alex Mack is also back on the field after a devastating leg injury during that Pittsburgh game last year that sidelined him for 11 games last season. Here's what the Pro Bowler had to say about being back on the field.
You know, it was honoring. You know, the fans really got behind me. The teammates really, like, they, you know, really supported me on my way off the field. And you definitely, you know, that means a lot. And you definitely want to get back out there and help your team. You know, it's part of the game. Is, I mean, injuries happen, and it's you just kind of take them as they go. It was one of the more serious ones. I mean, but, you know, I think it's healing well, and looking forward to the future. I think it's really important to be a, you know, a tight-knit offensive line because you all have to work together so much. You know, what the left tackle does is important to, you know, the center and the right guard. And, like, everyone kind of works together, and you spend a lot of time talking about blitz pickups, different looks, and you're really a large amount of very tight teamwork. Just want to come out here, play games, play well, and win games. You know, that's what every person in this building's goal is. If you're doing a really good job running the ball, I think it's really natural for defense to, you know, devote a fair amount of their defensive, you know, to stop the run. So, you know, I expected to see something like that because they're just going to load the box and you're going to have to throw it. And having a good run game enables those throws to open up, and it's something that I don't think, handled as well as we could have.
Well, I think we learned a big lesson last year about how important the center is. And to have him back on the field, really, just it's kind of a breath of fresh air to know that he'll be back there and that the quarterback can rely on their center again.
It's huge. That's basically the quarterback of the offensive line. And you saw last year when Alex Mack was in for the Browns, they ran for over 100 yards in four of the five games, actually over 120 yards in four of the five games. They averaged over 4 yards a carry in four of the five games. That running game production went way down once he went out of that lineup. So, yeah, it's huge to have him back. He talked about them working together. Well, he's the one who's making all those calls at the line of scrimmage for the offensive line. So it's important to have him there. He's one of the best players in the league at his position. And the Browns realized last year that they couldn't handle it really when he went down. And so that's why you draft Cam Irving, the best center in this draft. But, oh, by the way, he's already playing right guard in practice. He's already played right tackle in practice. On the second day of OTAs, he played left tackle while Joe Thomas got a day off with the first team. So you've got a versatile guy, and you have some insurance there at the center position. But, man, return of the Mac, it's a good thing.
All right, but you can talk about Cam Irving. He is not going to play center this year with Alex Mack there.
No, so, not at all.
All right, so we talk about that, but let's talk about some of the other battles that we could see on the offensive line.
Look to the right side. Left side set. Joe Thomas, Joel Bitonio, to center, Alex Mack, that's set. Right guard, John Greco, is going to battle Cam Irving. Right tackle, Mitchell Schwartz, might also be battling Cam Irving. And also Michael Bowie, the tackle from Seattle a couple years ago, who is one of the better run-blocking tackles in the National Football League. So there is going to be a lot of competition on the right side of that line. John Greco, Mitchell Schwartz, they welcome it. And I'll tell you what, as good as the line was when Mack was healthy last year, if you can make some upgrades there, even better. Think about the depth that means if all of a sudden a guy like John Greco becomes your swing interior lineman, or if Mitchell Schwartz becomes your swing tackle. tackle. That's huge for this team.
But the biggest thing I think I hear you saying is depth. There's depth there that you don't have to worry all the time. You know, not that you want to lose anybody, but you'll have a backup there that can make this team a little bit better.
And that's what's so great about Cam Irving. I think he can start for you, and he can play any position on that line.
All right, Nathan, we're going to be right back.
When we return, defensive back Dante Whitner makes a bold statement about the Browns' secondary, and Matt Wilhelm breaks down OTAs as only a former player can, exclusively here on Dog Pound Report.
Welcome back to Dog Pound Report. Joining us is Cleveland Browns senior writer Andrew Gribble. The Gribble.
The Gribbs.
The Gribbs.
What's going on?
You are OTAs. I mean, you're a busy man right now.
Yeah, you know, it just seems like yesterday we were looking ahead to the draft, and now all of a sudden we're looking forward to training camp. But it's getting really busy right now with OTAs. We're having a blast covering it.
All right, we got plenty of information to get from you. Let's get down to it, though. Let's talk about Dante Whitner. He made a huge contribution since coming to Cleveland last year, and the Pro Bowler is very proud of the Cleveland Browns secondary. How proud? Take a listen.
Last year, you know, we felt really confident going into the season. You know, started off really well. You know, kind of lost our momentum down the stretch. You know, but right now I feel like we're a lot more detailed within our work, especially in the secondary, you know, and just on defense as a group. So, you know, they say that the group that's supposed to take the biggest jump is the secondary in the year from year one to year two, and we really see that. When you're going to look at the stats, I would say that we were number one and number two in every category in National Football League that really, you know, distinguishes if you're a top secondary. So I'm not going to say top five or six. I'm going to say in the top three, you know, and that's based on, you know, men lie, women lie, stats don't, you know. So go look at the stats, rank us with the best or whoever so-called supposed to be the best and see what we ranked against those guys. But you can go and look at those stats, and we're up there one or two in every category. So I don't know what you have to do to be considered the best, but if the stats tell the truth, then I say we're up there.
I got to write this down. Men lie, women lie. Stats don't lie, do they?
You know, I just think the confidence in this defense is it can't be quantified by stats. I just think that they look at what they did last year with a very struggling run defense, and they kept this defense afloat from start to finish because they were so good against the pass. They lose Buster Skrine, but they basically cancel that out by bringing in Tremont Williams. And then they also have Justin Gilbert, Kawan Williams. They just have reason to think they're getting better and better, lots of stability in the system. That's why if you have to look at position groups on this team, easily the most confidence can be found in that defensive backfield.
Absolutely. Three of the four starters go to the Pro Bowl last year. The one who doesn't is replaced by Tremont Williams, who had a decorated career in Green Bay. You've got Justin Gilbert. You've got K1. You've got Pierre Desir. You draft Ibrahim Campbell. You draft Gaines. You got Ifo waiting to come in another year. This is a very, very deep secondary. They're absolutely top three. You got the Legion of Boom in Seattle. I think you've got the Cleveland Browns. And then the Jets go out there and they spend all their money. They bring back Revis. They bring back Cromartie. They get Buster Skrine. We'll see how they mesh together. We'll see where Crow's at this point in his career. But the Cleveland Browns are one of the top secondaries in the NFL. They were number one in quarterback rating allowed last year, number one in passes defense. They played excellent football, and they are absolutely elite.
All right, just don't talk about the run to the guys up front. That's all. So if you got the great secondary in the back, at some point, that's got to – you've got the confidence back there. That's got to translate up front, especially when you go out and draft a guy that can plug some holes.
Yeah, and I think the thing is this secondary believes that it's going to get that much better, and they're not going to be on an island as much this year. So, you know, they're part of that run defense, too. I think it goes position by position. Everyone can be better against the run. The cornerbacks can be better against the run. The safeties can be better against the run. That mentality is permeating just all over the defense, and it's going to carry over, and I think it can make the pass defense even better, too.
All right, what positions are up for grabs?
On the defensive side of the ball? Well, I was just going to say that talking to the coaches, they feel they're going to stop the run. That gives them the right to rush the passer, and these cornerbacks now and the secondary can play some of the graduate-level stuff where they can trap quarterbacks into interceptions. The Justin Gilbert touchdown, that was a trap coverage that they got against Andrew Luck. They knew a tendency he had, and they're going to be able to do more of that this year. But you talk about battles. The D-line is so deep. It's going to be fun to see who emerges there. Tremont Williams and Justin Gilbert for the number two cornerback spot. Obviously, Tremont in the lead, but Gilbert has impressed the coaches so far. And I think inside linebacker. Right now, you've drafted Hayes Pollard, who has looked very good. Darius Eubanks is back there. Tank Carter is going to have a little bit of a battle with those guys to try to make this roster. It's just deep on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, you talked about the defensive line. The thing I noticed at OTAs is that they would leave out the first-team linebackers, first-team defensive backs, and then it was just pure rotation along that defensive line, working in everyone, seeing where they felt most comfortable. So I almost look at that defensive line, especially without Danny Shelton at OTAs. It's just kind of wide open right now, and they're just seeing where these guys fit best, where they're most comfortable. and then you get a better sense and maybe use your time more efficiently when training camp comes around.
All right, talk about Danny Shelton for a second because he's not there. What does that mean? Is it? I mean, look, the guy's in school. You want to let him finish school. You got to let him finish school. But what is he missing?
Yeah, you know, I think Mike Pettine said this is time that really can't be replaced. They would obviously love to have him here, but they're really not upset because he's got a pretty good reason why he is not here right now. But I think they're so confident in Danny Shelton that he's a smart guy. He's got the playbook where they're in constant communication with him that Mike Pettine said by the time he gets back to training camp, this is going to be an afterthought. It's going to be a storyline that we just talk about in June because we talk about everything in June. So I think clearly they would love him here. He would love to be here, but he's got business to take care of.
Take on a double team, plug the middle, big fella. It's easy.
That's the playbook you're going to give him.
Yes.
All right, stick around. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more Dog Pound Report right after this.
Stay right there to catch up with linebacker Paul Kruger. Plus, find out how you can win 4 tickets to come rally with the Dog Pound.
Welcome back to Dog Pound Report. I'm Andy Baskin. Nathan Zagura is here. Also joining us is Cleveland Browns senior writer Andrew Gribble. Great. All right, earlier this week, Paul Kruger joined the boys over here on Cleveland Browns Daily to talk about his goals for this season.
There's always that first learning curve, but I think as far as understanding what the coaches are looking for, how, you know, our style of play, the tempo, all those types of things are very clear to us. And so I think the core group of guys on defense right now is pretty familiar with the way Coach O'Neill and Coach Pett want things done. And so, you know, like I said, we got to get our legs under us. We got to get the lungs back. But as far as what we're after, I think we're pretty well set. For me, you know, I just want to improve in every way that I can. So, yeah, increase in numbers. And I think the biggest thing for me is going to be playing a well-rounded game. You know, versus, you know, I think this year there were some games where I could have done a little better versus the run. And I think that's something we're all working towards. But for me personally, that'll be a big focus for me.
Big focus for everybody, stopping the run. But you want to talk about a guy that really was impacted by a coaching change. I thought he benefited more than anybody else.
Yeah, he was the pass rusher that this Mike Pettine defense really needed to have. And he delivered with double-digit sacks, something he was very proud of, something a Browns player has not done in many years. So he was just an important piece of that defense. But like he said, he can be a better linebacker overall, and he's focused on that. It's good to hear at this point in the offseason.
Jermaine Neal said, we will stop the run. Let me repeat, we will stop the run. Everybody's got to do it. One of the things the Browns didn't do well last year was set the edge against the run. They got undisciplined. They left their gaps, and so they didn't maintain gap integrity. That's been a point of emphasis. We saw Kruger do it early in the OTAs. Nate Orchard's done a pretty good job of it, too. That's something very good to see at that outside linebacker position.
And your thoughts on Nate Orchard?
Yeah, you know, he's a mature guy that comes in right away and can be that pass-rushing presence that the Browns did not have on the other side of the field. And I think the interesting thing we're seeing right now through these first three days of OTAs is that, you know, Barkevius Mingo is not able to be out there on the field doing much because of his shoulder injury. This is allowing Paul Kruger to maybe move around on the defense. He's playing some of that Sam. And then you see Nate Orchard out there trying to set the edge and rush the passer. He's a second-round pick. You expect some big things out of him right away. But he's going to have to compete for playing time because there's also Barkevius Mingo coming back and Scott Solomon, who they're very high on at outside linebacker.
All right, but with Mingo being hurt, I mean, these guys are getting looks that maybe they don't normally get to see during the regular season. It's always about opportunity with this in competition.
It is. And Scott Solomon came in with his opportunity against Carolina, looked like he had those fresh legs, that high-energy guy apparently had been bugging the offensive lineman in practice for weeks, gets out there, has some impact plays. And talk about Nate Orchard. This is a guy, in talking to the outside linebacker, Coach Brian Fleury, said he's constantly calling me, texting me all hours of the day, wanting to understand what it means to be an outside linebacker in the NFL. Am I supposed to do this? Talking about his drops. He'll be able to get to the quarterback. I think everybody in the building is convinced of that. Becoming a more complete linebacker, that's what they're working on there. It's actually an exciting group. And when you stop the run, as Paul Kruger said in that interview, we didn't have that part of it there, you earn the right to rush the quarterback. That's what Jim O'Neill says. And that's what they want to do all year long.
Yeah, this is an impressive rookie class. But Nate Orchard's personality, he might be one of the most impressive guys of the 12. You know, he takes this game seriously. He has a family. He talks about how his wife, it really grounded him and just made him a better football player. And that's why he thrived as a senior at Utah, also a school that Paul Kruger went to. They have kind of a connection there, and they've bonded really quickly. This is a really cohesive group. You know, they might be fighting for snaps on the playing field, but you know, they've kind of come together pretty quickly, some good personalities in that room. And I think there's reason to believe this group will be better this year.
All right, what's going on the app? What's going on ClevelandBrowns.com?
We've got a lot of projects we're working on. Next week, we're going to unveil a big, long story on a former Brown, Simon Fraser, what he's up to, the former Buckeye as well. He's got some big plans and a big future and a new career. We're also doing some big stories on Joe Hayden, Carlos Dansby, some of the big figures on this Cleveland Browns team, and getting a deeper look that we maybe haven't looked at in the past.
Yeah, looking forward to that Simon Fraser. You know, there's a kid from Upper Arlington that started out as a soccer player when he went to Ohio State, wanted to play soccer, and then he realized by the time he got out of Upper Arlington that football was his whole life. So that should be some good stuff coming up. I'm excited about that.
Oh, great. He's doing some big things now.
All right, looks good. We're looking forward to seeing that. We've got more Dog Pound Report coming your way right after this.
After the break, we pull back the curtain on the special teams OTAs and hear from Browns special teams coordinator Chris Tabor about driving competition.
Welcome back, Dog Pound. We're joined by, of course, the man, the myth, the legend from Cleveland Browns Daily, Matt Wilhelm.
My man.
Your first OTAs covering the Browns. Your thoughts?
It was exciting. It was good for me to be back out there. You got to figure, I started in the middle of last season. Wasn't able to take in a lot of practices as they were closed. But to get out there and see Johnny, see Coach Pettine and his assistants lead this team and grow this team, even in 2 days, there was a heavy turnover from day one to day two.
All right, as a former player, though, I got to know how important our OTA is. Because we sit here, we talk about this stuff all the time, and I'm like, well, okay, it's off season, but you're implementing a lot of things, and they're important. Your perspective, though.
They are absolutely very important. And for a lot of guys, they now know that Ray Farmer means business, as a few guys have left the Cleveland Browns, and a few just replaced them very immediately thereafter. But a huge amount of your content goes in right now, and then they have to prove to those coaches and management that they can stay in the league simply by putting on those pads and backing up what they can learn in OTAs with their pads in training camp.
What do you want to accomplish at OTAs? What kind of a tone are you trying to set for a team?
Well, for this defense, it's, again, that graduate level that you've consistently talked about, we talk about on the radio, and you've talked about earlier in the show. But for the offense, it's grasping that John DeFilippo system. They've been walking through things, but to go full speed now and practice together as pros, there's going to be some things that get thrown out. There's going to be some things that you want to add and continue to fine-tune moving forward into minicamp.
All right, you guys both had Chris Tabor, the special teams coordinator, on your radio show earlier this week. Here's what he had to say on your show.
Well, we're really trying to zero in, obviously, in the return game, both in the punt return game and in the kick return game, and kind of get that back up to the standard that we've kind of set. And then the other area that we're just trying to do, we got a lot of new guys, and we're just trying to develop them. And that's kind of what they call, you know, the second phase right here, where you get to do a lot of skill development and get some classroom in with the guys. And then when we hit OTAs here, kind of put it all together. So I'm anxious to see where the guys are at once we kind of start throwing all the live bullets at them. No question. I think it's just one of those deals. I mean, we have to do a good job, whether it's in the specialist period or in a team period or if it's in post-practice, getting the guys number of catches, trying to put pressure around them to continue to develop them. And then I think, as I always say, the tape will tell the story, and then the tape will tell you who to play, and I don't think it'll be any different this year. Well, we always say that at the end of the day, we want to be the number one unit in the league. I mean, I think it's just like anything. I mean, as a team, you play to go to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl, but at the same time, we know we got a lot of work to do.
Sure.
And if we can just kind of take incremental steps each and every day to get a little bit better, then we'll set ourselves up to get those goals accomplished. One guy was with Tennessee last year. The other guy was in Philadelphia. Travis, being in Tennessee, he has a good strong leg, kicks the ball well, gets great lift on the football, and very mentally tough, as is Kerry Spear, who graduated out of Vanderbilt, like I said, was in Philadelphia. But they're both competing real well. It's a very close competition right now, and kind of eager for this next part. We get OTAs and kind of get the guys around them, see how they respond under pressure. Will kind of be the next test for them.
All right, so we had a chance to hear from Chris Tabor. But before I want to even get into the special teams, what makes him such a great special teams coach? He has survived this is on his fourth coach here, and to have any kind of longevity in the NFL when coaches are coming and going, Chris Tabor must be pretty special.
He has to be doing something right, and I think what he is doing right is teaching young players that give him maximum effort, especially on those return games. He has led the league or been in the top 10 under every head coach, maybe besides last year, which is something that we talked about on CBD, about him revamping that return game, whether it's Travis Benjamin, Duke Johnson, or Tremont Williams, maybe on punt returns.
They've also been great at covering. So last year, our return game on offense wasn't so good, but in terms of covering kicks, we were among the best in terms of covering kicks and punts. Marlon Moore, Johnson Batamosi both had excellent seasons as the team's gunners. But the good news is, and we came out of that interview as well, we found out they're open to trying anything. You got Duke Johnson averaged over 30 yards per kickoff return at the U. Justin Gilbert will get an opportunity to return kicks. He had six kick return touchdowns at Oklahoma State. So getting your best playmakers, getting the ball in their hands, that's going to help this return game.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about the kicking game. And the new Browns kickers are going to be challenged with the new, they'll do it in the preseason where we'll see it first, the new extra point rule moving back to the 20. Matt, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm kind of iffy. I'm a traditionalist, so I loved the extra point the way it was because it's the game that I played. But it's going to be very different to watch. It's going to be, you know, weird to see them line up, you know, at the 15-yard line and kick from the 22. And the one thing that, to me, is sort of an oxymoron when it comes to Roger Goodell and the NFL approving this potential rule change is you're adding another competitive play. So that means a collision by those offensive defensive linemen. And as we've learned, with the defensive reward of blocking one and taking it back, you get those 2 points. So you're going to have guys rushing off the edge, and that means, you know, Billy Winn and those edge wing guys on the PAT protection really have to be on their job doing it well. Otherwise, 2 points can go the other way.
Statistically, it shouldn't make that big of a difference. Extra points convert about 99%. If you look at the last few years, from 30 to 35 yards, when you get to line up in the middle of the field, kickers convert about 97% of those. So really, it shouldn't make a big difference. But I'm going to tell you what, I think you're going to see more 2-point conversions, because when you kick from the 10, how often is the 10-yard line chewed up? With all the touchbacks now, the 22-yard line, 23-yard line is going to be chewed up every single time on the field. So you're late in the game, in bad weather. Do you try to kick it from there? You might not have good field conditions. Do you go for the two? Do teams want to try to make that mental statement now? Hey, we're going to shove it down your throats, and then we're going to shove it down your tinkin' throats again right from the two. So I think you're going to have a lot of gamesmanship, and it's going to change it. You're going to see a higher percentage of teams go for two now. Even though statistically maybe they shouldn't, I think you're going to see it mentally, because with conditions it could seem like a tougher kick.
So are you throwing your go for two chart out the window and coming up with a new one?
You definitely are. And I think, you know, Chip Kelly, everybody throws his name in that bag of tricks because of he did it at Oregon. He knows he's got a significant playbook just for those 2-point conversions. And so I wouldn't be surprised if many other teams implemented that same thing, even guys being signed and used specifically in that role of converting those 2-point conversions.
And you're going to have to dedicate practice time to defending 2-point plays and going for 2-point plays. It's going to change the way teams kind of approach and prepare for this. And it's a live play. You talked about that. Defenses can return these now 4 points. So it's going to change a lot. It's going to make things a little more interesting. You're going to see a team kneel at some point, not even attempt an extra point or a 2-point conversion up one late in the game. You're going to see that.
It sounds to me, though, like you're creating a job for Tim Tebow.
You definitely are.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it lays out. All right, we're going to come right back. We'll have more Dog Pound Report after this.
Stay tuned for more Dog Pound Report. We'll go right along in the golf cart with Phil Taylor, Chris Kirksey, and the crow, Isaiah Crowell.
Welcome back to Dog Pound Report. The Browns recently hosted one of their biggest fundraisers of the year, the annual golf outing. Let's take a look at the great day.
Thanks for being here. Oh, yeah, course, really appreciate it.
10 a.m. we're going to play a little shotgun start golf.
We're out here for the 16th annual Cleveland Browns Foundation Golf Tournament. This is our longest standing fundraiser for the foundation, and to date we've raised over $2.6 million from this event. And so this event, in addition to our Radiothon and our 50-50 raffle, really serve as our three main revenue sources for the funding that goes back into the community. And so through events like this, we've been able to increase our grant giving by about 170% in the last year. We're very happy this year for the tournament. We have 28 of our partners, of our stakeholders that are joining us. They'll be accompanied by a Browns player or celebrity. They really have a lot of fun out here. They get a little bit competitive, but they have a ton of fun. It's a great way for us to connect them to our work and the work that they help support that we do in the community. We're very proud to have Zenith Systems as our title partner.
Zenith Systems is a commercial electrical and systems integration contractor located in Cleveland. And we've been a longtime partner for the Cleveland Browns. And it's really important for us to be here as a good partner of the organization and take part in this the foundation, which is for a great cause. We were really lucky today to find out we're golfing with Jim Brown, and I don't know what to say. I mean, golfing with a legend is a tremendous opportunity, and we're lucky, and Jim's great, and it's been a spectacular morning so far, and the weather cleared up, so we couldn't ask for anything more.
There it is. Oh, wait, you got the members' bounce.
Get up.
Big Jimmer at that.
I think it's truly important to have a real foundation attached to the Cleveland Browns. We can do so much in the community, and if you have an organized foundation led by people like Dee Haslam and Renee, you can do so much good. I feel like the golf tournament's our signature event for the foundation because we get so many players, so many coaches, our corporate partners, and it's a way for everyone to have a great day, have fun, the organization has fun, but at the same time, we're contributing right back to the community.
Really was a great day. I think you went through every season while we were out there, though, didn't it? It was. We had a little bit of rain, then we got some sun, but it was a lot of fun.
It was a ton of fun. I had a good time out there tearing it up at Barrington. We got to go with you on number one, where you were the celebrity driver. But you also came out with us, and from 70 yards, hit one to about 5 feet so we can make a birdie. So
I did.
You.
I will have to say that my celebrity long drive, it was either feast or famine, you know, based on how I hit it. But more so than anything, guys, it was an excellent event. The one thing that I've never been a part of any organization that I played at, was an event like that with that much player interaction, that much player involvement. And I think that just goes to show what Dee Haslam, Alex Shiner, and the Haslam family in general have really implemented into this culture of the Cleveland Browns, which is the Browns Give 10. And it's a countrywide, should be a countrywide phenomenon, but it starts with the Cleveland Browns, and they're setting an example, and the players back it up with their participation.
Yeah, you get a great day of golf. You get the players out there, an unbelievable silent auction, then a live auction with once-in-a-lifetime experiences, and the bidding at that live auction got completely out of control on the Super Bowl package, and it was just a lot of fun. A lot of money was raised for a great cause supporting education in Northeast Ohio.
Did you get to play at all or no?
I stayed on the number one. I hit my long drive, and when I had an opportunity,
Played with us, man. Come on.
I got to play a shot in and made them a birdie.
So I had to do radio and you guys got to play. I love that.
Yes,
that works.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's talk a little bit more about what the players went through on this great day, and we had a chance to mic some of them up.
Hey, y'all can't laugh at me. Best shot all day. And when you're under pressure, you got to get it done.
So you see the orange glove, dog pound?
Yeah, they called me yesterday to go to the Masters, but I had practice, so couldn't do it. Good stroke. Hole in one. Gotcha. So it all counts. 14 inches. Defense gets a stop. That'll work. That's cool.
Do you only golf in this every year or do you go out?
This is my first time.
First time ever golfing?
Mm-hmm.
Ever swinging a golf ball?
Ever.
Wow.
Is it 144? Where? Over here? Over here? Oh, you should use this one?
The lower the number, the further you go.
Oh, okay. I don't need a tee, do I?
No, you don't need it.
Oops. Hit it off. No tee with this one. I don't know why I can't hit with these for some reason. Yeah, actually the best one. Actually the best one.
I got to tell you what, I give the crew a lot of credit. Most improved on the day. It's not easy. First time out there, you got people around you watching you. You got a lot of pressure.
Golf is a hard game. He's like, man, just give me the football and let me run to the end zone. Don't make me hit this ball.
And I don't think he necessarily had to explain that he's never played golf or swung a club just simply based on his attire.
Wow. He looked good, though, right?
He looked great, but just not on a golf course.
He looked good for the club.
But, you know, he got out there. You know what was impressive is the fact that he realized that he needed to shorten his swing even to make contact. He pulled a hybrid, and I'm not quite sure what a 144 is, but I got to give him a lot of credit. And he stood tough.
He did.
He dressed like he was going to the nine, not playing
That's
nine.
Right. All right, Matt, thank you very much.
You got it.
I don't know that I want to play golf with you, though. Maybe
he can play, man.
Soon.
Absolutely.
All right, hang on. Make sure you can listen to him throughout the week with Nathan on Cleveland Browns Daily. And thanks again for joining us.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, good stuff. We're going to be right back.
Stay tuned for your opportunity to score four free tickets to the Browns' first ever Fan Fest and win your chance to meet the greatest of all time, Jim Brown, Paul Warfield, and Lockdown Joe Hayden, plus many, many more.
Welcome back to Dog Pound Report. We have a special guest joining us, Kevin Griffin, the Vice President of Fan Experience and Marketing for the Cleveland Browns. It is great to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
KG, it's great to have you here. And obviously, this was a big week for the Browns. Earlier, you made an announcement that the Orange and Brown scrimmage in early August will head down to Columbus, and the Browns will be playing at the Shoe. That's a pretty neat thing.
That's right. Last year, we had our team scrimmage in Akron, the University of Akron. This year, we're moving it to Columbus at Ohio Stadium. So we're thrilled to be able to take some of the Dog Pound to Columbus and connect with them. Our team is excited. Coach Pettine's excited. And obviously, it's all about the fans, but also about football. So we want to make sure, Coach wants to make sure they have a great seamless football experience, and those guys get ready to play in the first preseason game following that.
All right, Kevin, most of us, me especially, remember you as an Ohio State Buckeye.
Yeah.
One, what's it like to play there? And two, how important is it to make Columbus a Browns town? Because I already think it is.
Yeah.
But how important is it to make sure that Central Ohio Browns backers group is loud and proud?
Yeah, we've got a ton of fans in Columbus. And, you know, oftentimes you'll hear people talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Cincinnati Bengals in Columbus. But when we really dig into the research, it is, Columbus is a Browns town as well. We've got a ton of fans there. You mentioned the Browns backers. We've got a great group of Browns backers clubs in Columbus. But you look at the data and you look at the ratings, particularly television ratings, it is a Browns town. So we're just going to reinforce that point. And to your earlier question about playing at Ohio Stadium, it's a thrill anytime you can step on the big stage like playing a football game at Ohio Stadium. It's a great time.
All right, you talked about the fans. Fan Fest coming up on Saturday.
Absolutely. Fan Fest will take place at the Cleveland Convention Center on Saturday, June 6th, from 10 o'clock to 5 o'clock. We're thrilled. We have 30 current players from our roster who will be there. We've got about 10 alumni, including Jim Brown and Paul Warfield, who will be there. A great day of activities for family and any Browns fan. This is a place you absolutely want to be. Selfies with players, autographs with players, Q&A sessions. We've got a session that Nathan will actually host with Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer. We'll get in and talk some ball. It's an absolute place you want to be. And then, you know, Nathan reminded me earlier, we also have the locker room sale. So we'll have a lot of old merchandise that will be on sale for fans to get. So it'll be a great time.
So where do they get tickets?
Go to clevelandbrowns.com. That's where your fans can buy tickets. Or on our mobile app, you can purchase tickets there as well. And then we've brought four tickets for you guys to give away here on the show to one lucky fan.
All right, so go to clevelandbrowns.com/BrownsTV to enter FanFest. That's all you have to do, clevelandbrowns.com/BrownsTV. So easy. What drives these events, though? What makes you say, you know what, we need to do this? Because I think as far as interaction goes, this is as good as it gets.
Yeah, you know, we've got a pretty simple mission with the Cleveland Browns. It is support the football team, play good football, and then engage the fan. And so that's the conversation we have each and every day in our building, and we're always thinking about how to connect our fans with our players and vice versa. And then, most importantly, our players and coaches have made a commitment to be at an event like FanFest or the uniform reveal and then really actually participate and engage with the fans. You really don't see that with many NFL franchises. So it's a special place to work. It's a special place to live. And we think we have a pretty special franchise with the connection between the fans and the team.
All right, since you're here, you get to participate in predictions. Give us a prediction for next week.
Well, this is a bit of a layup. I think a week from today, people will rave about FanFest, and we'll be planning the second annual Cleveland Browns FanFest because of the success.
I'm going to make my prediction. Get out of my way. It's going to be a warning and a prediction. Get out of my way because I'm going to go crazy at this locker room sale. An opportunity with the new uniforms. I'm sure some of the old ones will be there. And like I said, maybe I'll pick up a Crow jersey, and then I can trade him some golf lessons for an autograph on that thing for my basement.
How harsh was he on that? Come on.
Yeah, that was
man, I want to help him out, man. Yeah. Somebody hung him out to dry in the editing process right there. Yeah. That's my man, the Crow. You know that.
Caw-caw. All All right, you win on that. I'll give you that one. My prediction is that when folks go to FanFest, they're going to be in a great mood because the Cavaliers will already be up one game on the Golden State Warriors because it's just going to be a great week, I think, for Cleveland. You've got the Cavaliers, you've got FanFest, and you've got Joe Haden also. After the FanFest, he's got his celebrity softball game,
right,
too. So
yeah,
a lot of good things going on.
Absolutely.
Take us home, my friend.
All right, thanks for tuning in. Enjoy your day, and remember, we bark together in the Dog Pound Report.